Good evening and welcome to the August 20th, 2024 Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting. Thank you for your participation. We will begin with introductions. We'll begin on my right.
I'm Jonathan Tudan, South Kitsap.
Good evening, Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
And then online?
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Okay.
And Stephen Bell, Central Kitsap.
All right, thank you. And I'm Joe Phillips from North Kitsap. Commissioners Kaltenborough and Zoller and Smith are absent tonight. Let's see. Hybrid meeting protocol. Please silence all electronic devices during the meeting. If attending in person, please refrain from conversations with others to allow a clear, audible recording of the meeting. Testifying and comments. For those wishing to comment, please state your name and general area of the county that you are residing in when you begin your comments. There are four options available for comments. Those in attendance can raise their hands to indicate they wish to speak, and the chair will recognize you, and you can come to the podium to speak. Those attending via Zoom can click on the raised hand feature to indicate they wish to comment. Your name will be called and your link will be unmuted at that time. Phone attendees can dial *9 to indicate they wish to comment. The last four numbers of your phone number will be called and your number will be unmuted. The final method is to provide written comments to staff at awalston@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. the day of the meeting. Written comments should include date of the meeting, the comments are meant for, the commenter's name, general area of residence, and the agenda item or subject you're addressing. Comments are limited to 2 minutes with public hearing testimony limited to 3 minutes. These limits are adjustable at the chair's discretion. That brings us to adoption of the agenda. It should be noted that we will not have any minutes to be adopted tonight. Other than that, does anybody have any comments on the agenda? No? Okay. We'll assume we're approved. And moving forward, we come to our general public comment first period. And let me... And I have Mr. Palmer.
Presumably you can hear me.
Yes.
I looked at the agenda and frankly, I'm a bit dismayed that the county, I know they're using grant funds, they're spending money on worthless studies. And we're told earlier relative to the comprehensive plan that we have a final draft environmental impact statement out in August, and seems like we're drawing to the close of August and no final environmental impact statement. Instead, we're working on a tree ordinance, which in my view requires a lot of vetting, and particularly with respect to what you can develop if you have to preserve trees. In urban areas, I don't think you can preserve very many trees. And if you do, you're taking up usable ground for development. Plus, you've got the testimony of Gig Harbor and what they tried to do to preserve trees in the subdivision, and that wound up killing a person who was driving by the proposed subdivision at that time, and a tree fell out in a windstorm, fell out and killed a guy just driving by. So it's just a ludicrous thing to try to do in an urban area. And I'll participate as best I can in future meetings, but I think we're wasting a whole lot of time on studies that we don't need, even if they are paid for by grant. If you want to check the facts, go back to the early 1990s and then track whether there's been any increase in sea level. And I don't think you're going to find it. If you are only calculating an inch in sea level over a 30, 40 year period of time, that's hardly a crisis. I know we won't get, public doesn't get a whole lot of opportunity to express their opinion, but you got mine now.
Okay, thank you for that comment, Mr. Palmer. Let's see. I do not see any other comments at this time, so we will close this period and move to our first briefing, the Sea Level Rise Vulnerability and Risk Assessment. Mr. Rogers.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Jim Rogers. I'm with DCD, Long Range Planning, and we are conducting a sea level rise vulnerability and risk assessment. We received a grant from the Washington Department of Ecology, and the assessment will identify potential losses or damages due to flooding from sea level rise, characterize the risk of loss, and highlight areas of the community, resources, infrastructure, and assets considered most vulnerable. And to walk you through the introduction to this study and give you some details on it, we have our consultants here with us tonight. We have two online, that is Alexandra Plum and Jessica Cote. I'll let them introduce themselves. But first, I'd like to introduce you to Don Spilsbury from FACET.
Yep. Hi, good evening. I'm Don Spilsbury Pucci with FACET, formerly DCG Watershed. And I do the technical and the GIS mapping. In fact, quick little side, I got my GIS start with Dave Nash here in Kitsap, so I miss him a lot. And so I guess I'll just throw it to my team, to our team. Alex is our project manager, and she will be doing the main introduction. And when it gets technical stuff, then I get to do that part, along with Jessica Cote, who is our geomorphologist. So I guess with that, oh, and I get to do the slides. Turning it on. All right. Okay, Alex.
Thank you, Don, and thank you, commissioners, for allowing us to present to you tonight. So the agenda, we will start out with some brief team introductions. We'll discuss the project overall, and then I will kick it to Jessica and Don to talk about where we are in our project analyses and mapping development. And then we'll talk about the community engagement plan, which you all hopefully have seen, and then we'll talk about the timeline and what we look like for next steps. So this is just a brief overview of what the project team is currently conducting. So we have not only Don and Jessica, we have a few members dedicated to outreach and resiliency. And we also have some GIS mapping support and marine engineering. And Jessica, I will give you this opportunity to introduce yourself and the Blue Coast team.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, I'm Jessica Cote, so I'm a coastal engineer and geomorphologist, as Don mentioned, and also Greg Curtis from Blue Coast is working with me on this project, who has similar background to me. We're both licensed professional engineers under the civil umbrella, though.
So the overall purpose of the project is to identify assets that might be at a potential of loss or risk of damage from sea level rise. So in order to do this, we plan on completing a risk analysis and vulnerability assessment that's based on the mapping predictions and a level of risk that was decided upon by the Technical Advisory Committee back in July. And we'll talk about how we came to those conclusions a little bit later. And then we will propose some site-specific or region-specific actions to address increased sea level rise interactions and help mitigate risk. That will also include some suggested code revisions where applicable. So our overall approach to the project is really in four parts. So we will cover the mapping development, community engagement, that audit of existing development regulations and policies where we can recommend improvements, and then the overall vulnerability and risk assessment report. And then I'll take it back to Dawn.
Thank you. So now we get to try and explain how Jessica and I are going to do this before Alex will tell you how we're going to share it with everybody and write it up. So these are in the technical assessment. This is, oh, yes, sir.
Can you give us a little background of what your company is, where your company's located?
Oh, sure.
What projects you've worked on before? Who is Blue Coast?
Okay. So Facet is we started as the watershed company, so as an environmental consulting team, but we recently merged with DCG Engineering. So now we are an engineering firm and natural resource consulting firm. I'm an ecologist by trade with some GIS and drone remote mapping work in my background. And I personally was pulled onto the team because of the work that I did in Island County when I was there as a staff member with public health. And then Alex also has got a planning background. She's a planner. And Jessica Cote and her team, they're the geomorphologist engineering. So they're able to bring a level of engineering math and scope to this. And also she's, like she said, she's a coastal geomorphologist. So her whole degree and training is in how does the sea move this material around. So the other projects we're currently working on as Facet are, we're working in Pacific. In fact, we're heading down there tomorrow for an advisory committee meeting and a public meeting at Pacific County. So we're doing a second round of sea level rise report for them, sea level rise analysis. We're looking at groundwater and how that interacts with the ocean down there and the city of Owako as well down there. So does that answer?
I'll just add Dawn for context. So yeah, Blue Coast Engineering, we're a 10-person company. We have an office in Bellingham and an office in Lake Forest Park. I've been personally working in Kitsap County since 2006 on the Seattle to Bremerton ferry route. So I, at different companies, have been employed and contracted by Kitsap Transit since 2006 to monitor beaches within Kitsap County. I'm also working for Kitsap County Parks on the Point No Point beach repair from the extreme water level event. So I have a lot of on-the-ground experience with flooding exacerbated by extreme water level events in Kitsap County. I'm also the lead engineer for a project for restoration at the Wildfish Conservancy is leading restoration for Norwegian Point Park and working directly for the county and Public Works on a repair design of a diagonal culvert, which would be tidally influenced, that runs under Hansville Road and Buck Lake Road, Point No Point Road intersection. So I've been around Puget Sound for over 20 years or almost 20 years, but Blue Coast has been in existence for 6 years, and I'm one of the owners of Blue Coast.
Thanks, Jessica. And Facet is the team that Alex and I are attached to is from Freeland and Kirkland, Washington. We have offices in Seattle and Spokane and Tacoma and Mount Vernon.
In Mount Vernon,
yeah. And then my Kitsap connection, actually, my daughter was born here 20 years ago when we lived here and we were stationed here with the Navy on the Carl Vinson. So does that good? Okay. So the map development overview, these are the general steps that we're taking. The light green are the ones that we've already accomplished. The dark green is where we're going. So where we've been and where we're going. So the QAPP, that's the Quality Assurance Protection Plan that's required by Ecology. And we have one of those signed and in place, approved by Ecology. So now we can, that was just this past week with Jim's great help. So now we are set forth on to our analyses. We've been able to choose projections with the technical advisory committee, which Alex will talk about here in a quick sec. We'll talk about the projections in this segment though, and what they are. And then we were in the process of aggregating data. So compiling all the GIS layers and information from the public and of observational flooding and such like that. And then we're going to put this all together in a on maps and intersect the layers to see and do some math and get some quantification and qualification of where things intersect. So that's the model, they call it a model. And we are also going to be doing some wind wave modeling, and Jessica will explain that when we get to that slide. We're going to produce them all in maps and then write it all up. So projections, what are they? They are estimated levels of increase of the Stillwater and including storm surge. There's a couple different numbers. They were created and drafted by the University of Washington Sea Grant by Dr. Ian Miller and his team, and also with support of University of Washington's Climate Impacts Group. So there's a couple of reports. Well, there's many couple of reports that are like the foundation of what we consider. And those numbers you can choose. Well, I'll get to how you choose them, but how they derived the numbers were looking at historical tide gauge data to see where we've been, to see the tide and draw a graph to see kind of how, what the increase has been in the past. And then we look at that, Dr. Miller looked at that with the, and his team with the future projections, looking at different greenhouse gas emission scenarios. And I'll go over it really, we'll skip over a lot of it. I'm happy to answer questions, but we've got, I'm going to assume there's some familiarity with this whole idea of this hockey stick where we're the seas can rise faster as we go into the future, but also does the uncertainty around that, those numbers, the further we go into the future, the more uncertain we are about the, if we're actually going to hit that or not. The tide gauge information is also looked at, that's what we call the sea level rise. Then we look at, Dr. Miller looked at the land and how fast the land is rising underneath and, or is it sinking? And that's due to tectonics and also a small amount to glacial isostatic rebound. So what we found, what he found, and this is just super interesting, Nia Bay is rising faster than the projected sea level rise, whereas South Sound is tipping down and sinking faster. So they've got a higher, they're expecting to have a higher amount of sea level rise in the South Sound than they are in Port Townsend. Whidbey Island's kind of the pivot point, and that has to do with the, you know, Cascadia subduction. So and that when they layer those two or all of those things, it becomes relative sea level rise. So you'll see the term relative sea level rise. And so what they're able to do is produce a table. And I didn't copy the table and I apologize for that, but you can look at one axis is by year. So there's a 20, 50, 20, 60, 20, 70 down to 2150. And then on the other axis, that's the Y, and the X axis is a probability. So how sure do you want to be, or do we want to be, when we choose a number or choose numbers to look at, that we're actually going to hit that? So a 1% confidence interval is, gives you a really high number in rise, but where it means that we're not, it's a, like a 100-year, a 1% chance that we're going to see it. A 50% is like, we're as likely as we're not likely to see it. A 99 or a 90% is like, we're pretty darn sure we're going to hit that number at least by that rise. So that report in particular looked at what we call the mean high water Stillwater level in this image. And and including the storm surge. The storm surge is being accounted for with the extreme flood document that follows the first report. And that looks at historical tide gauge data and looks at the magnitude of the max flood in each year, and then kind of gives an idea of what the max flood, what we're likely to see once every 50 years or once every 100 years or once every 20 years. And so we can take that amount and add that onto our projected sea level rise to kind of map that onto the surface of the Earth. What those don't take into account are the waves and the push. And I'm going to leave Jessica to talk about that because she does a way better job than I do about how that intersects. That also changes how it lands on the landscape. These are the two reports that we're talking about, and they're easily found. I think they're both linked in your presentation. So if you want any more background information on this, also you can Google Dr. Miller or this the projected sea level rise of Washington State, and that's a really good. There's presentations that have been recorded for him, by him, and I say him, but just because I know him, but his team has done this work. So C. Grant has been doing a really great job in communicating it and educating, following it up with education and workshops and stuff. And there's a lot of other documents that go along with this, and they're on the Coastal Hazard Resiliency Network. It's also a treasure trove of information. So including this document, how to choose, and this is what we used with Jim's help with the Technical Advisory Committee. So the bold is the decisions or the recommendations by the TAC for mapping for Kitsap. We felt this would reflect the what people want to see and the comfort level here. So 8.5, that's the relative concentrated pathway. Concentration pathway, that just means greenhouse gas, that means the greenhouse gas expectation. So 4.5 is the business as normal kind of projection. 8.5 is if we are able to hold to the no 2 degree warmer temperature. Yeah. So No, 8.5 is what happens if we don't hold to the 2 degrees. 4.5 is what happens when we do. So we're going with the 8.5 because those already, with the numbers that they used for the report are already showing that these were the best case scenario and that we're projecting trending higher with the newer releases of the IPC, the International Climate Change Reports. Timeframe, we're going to do two timeframes. We're going to look at 2050 and 2100, and that is to reflect the different planning objectives. So small, short-term planning for capital improvement plans, for culvert fixes and moving water, or 2100 if you're building, you're starting to build a house or a big facility, and you have a lifespan of that, you want to plan ahead a little bit. I should also emphasize that this is a screening document. This is not a site-specific replacement for any kind of information. So this is to kind of give us an idea. It's a little bit more specific than the 2020 assessment that Kitsap County did, but it is not a site-specific engineering document. And we're going to have, based on the commissioner's comments yesterday, we're going to message that clearly through all the mapping as well. So the level of certainty or level of risk. So we're going to look at the 1%, which gives us a higher number to look at mapping. We're looking at the 50% and the 90%. So I'm going to skip that one because I explained that one and that wasn't exactly the graph I was hoping I'd pull for that. Modeling is basically when we make maps and put all the information together and then run the intersection of what those look like. And then that'll enable us to look at how many buildings might be impacted at what scale and what level. Will any hospitals or police stations or wastewater treatment plants be impacted? How many outfalls, that kind of thing. So that's our modeling. And so the wind wave model, I'm going to let Jessica explain that. Please, Jessica.
So before I talk about the wind wave specifically, I'll just mention, to reiterate about what Dawn said about total water levels, right? So we have the still water level, which is essentially tides, But then we have potentially have atmospheric effects. So where the there's a low pressure system, it pushes down in the middle of Puget Sound essentially and pushes water up on the sides or on the shorelines. And so that contributes to our total water level when we have an extreme water level event. And then we also can have wind waves and wave run-up on top of that. So wind waves is the physical wave as it propagates across. And the run-up is as the wave hits the shoreline, and it's the amount that the water runs up the shoreline. So that total excursion and elevation that it reaches. So as an example, the December 27th, 2022 event, which a lot of people are familiar with because we had massive flooding, including at Point No Point Park, that was not just, a lot of people refer to it as a king tide event. That was an extreme water level event. So we had low pressure, we had king tides, and in some places we had some wind waves at Point No Point, for example, but a lot of our wind was out of the south there, where that's not, it's, it affects one portion of that area, but not the northern shoreline. So these are all come together. And so in terms of wind waves, we're not creating, we often model wind waves, but we're not creating like a large model of all of Kitsap County. We're essentially breaking the county up into characteristic pieces of shoreline, and then we're calculating the wind waves that are applicable to that stretch of shoreline. So this isn't something that could be used specifically like for an engineering design. It just gives you a sense of how important are wind waves at this particular stretch of shoreline compared to another one. So wind waves are dictated by wind blowing across the water. So the distance in which that wind can blow, the water depth in which it blows across, as well as the orientation of the shoreline itself. So we'll do a wind analysis, we'll calculate wind waves, one kind of at characteristic at each reach, and then we'll actually calculate the wave run-up. And we do this for varying events, as Don mentioned, the like a 100-year event means that there's 1% chance of occurring in any given year. So we'll do like a 10-year, a 50-year, and a 100-year event, for example.
Thanks, Jessica. So here are the assets, some of the representative assets that we're going to be looking at. And so this was also informed by the Technical Advisory Committee. They added the brownfield sites and landfills and marinas and bays. So if there is anything that is not being, that is not on this list, let us know. And yeah, for sure.
How about saltwater intrusion into individual wells? Is that part of the, I know it's not a group A, so.
Right. No, that's not part of this analysis because that is a really site-specific situation. And how we handled that in Pacific County is we use this first screening like we're doing here in Kitsap to identify areas that may be a little bit more susceptible to it. And we after the mapping, and we can see where the, you know, the high concentration of septics or personal wells, individual wells are. And then what we did is we went back for a second phase. That's what we're doing with a hydrogeologist. And then they have to look at the well logs and subsurface geology and how, and use that special magic math, I call it, because it's crazy complicated. And those models and figure out how that moving underneath. We do No, we can talk about it in a generic term way for information for the community, but we're not going to be able to tell you where and which wells. Not with this phase. That's pretty out of scope. Yeah, and you need a little bit more time. We're in a crazy fast deadline with this now, so we wouldn't be able to do that with the well logs and such. Yeah. And now this. Oh, yes, sir.
I noticed that you don't have anything about cities, major industrial sites. Oh,
thank you for that. So this our area is going to be the shoreline jurisdiction for Kitsap County, the reservations, and Silverdale, the unincorporated parts of Kitsap County. We'll be mapping Bremerton and Port Orchard as well, but we're not going to be looking at their assets. I think we're going to support them if they need that as far as like information, but we're not running those analyses. That's outside. And then Maybridge Island has a project going on currently right now, doing something very similar. And I've been trying to get a hold of their team so that we can look at the inundation levels and the projections that they chose to kind of be able to coordinate and communicate those, but I haven't got a call back yet, but I'll keep on it. And the Navy. The Navy is not they're part of the technical advisory committee. Sorry, spoiler alert, Alex. We're not modeling anything on their property either. So is there another industrial site that you're thinking?
I was just thinking that we ought to include the major drivers of income around here.
Yeah, the city, the Navy.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. No, that's a good point. All right, Alex.
Thanks, Don. So once we complete the vulnerability and risk assessment and evaluate what assets might be at risk, we will identify some recommendations for how some of those impacts could be mitigated. In addition to that report, we will be completing an audit of the current Kitsap County regulations and policies to determine if there's areas that could be improved potentially to mitigate risk or loss. And some of those regulations could include the Shoreline Master Program, the Flood Hazard Regulations, the CAO, the Comp Plan, things like that. And those will be documented in a technical memorandum that could be used for future updates or for consideration by the county. And so I believe you all had a copy of the Community Participation Plan. So that also included a timeline of where we're at and where we're going. So we have had two meetings with the Technical Advisory Committee. We really had just a kickoff meeting, and then we walked through what the different areas that the Technical Advisory Committee, we would need their feedback on, which included the different timelines, the level of confidence, and then the RCP scenarios. So we will be meeting with the public again in September. So we have a meeting scheduled for September 11th, where we plan on giving a project overview and potentially some preliminary maps or areas where we want feedback from the public. At that same time, we plan on issuing a public survey. So the survey we will go over in subsequent slides. But we are looking for feedback from the Planning Commission on whether or not you think those questions are appropriate, if you'd like things that maybe we missed or things you would like to change. And then we plan on coming back to the Technical Advisory Committee in November with a review of preliminary maps, and then going back to the public once those maps are complete to talk about the survey results, the draft maps, and the preliminary findings. And then we will go through this project through until June 2025. That's when the funding expires. So the role of the Technical Advisory Committee, like we talked about, is to establish what projections and provide input on mapping priorities, identify any gaps or concerns based on the information that we've given them so far. And then once we get through the vulnerability and risk assessment, help inform those recommendations for any code updates. And then also to consider and utilize the feedback from the public meetings. We want to take the feedback from the public meetings and bring it back to the Technical Advisory Committee to see if we need to pivot at all in our priorities, mapping, or strategies. And so we have the public engagement plan, which is published on the website, I believe, and that is subject to change as we get feedback from the public or from county leaders for public outreach events. We plan on having open house events, and we do plan on coming back to the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners throughout this project. And then we also have some focused outreach events that we will identify as we hear back from the public and identify if we're having any gaps in our public outreach. So if we need to reach certain communities that perhaps maybe aren't responding to the surveys or aren't attending meetings, we want to make sure that we get as much feedback as possible. And then we also plan on preparing an ArcGIS story map. We have a preliminary map that we plan on creating that's really an introduction to sea level rise and what this project is about and what the mapping might look like. And then once our vulnerability and risk assessment is complete, we plan on publishing all of that information in a story map so that the public can access those maps in an interactive way that's readily accessible. So some examples of what we've done in the past, you'll see on the left is our Pacific County sea level rise story map that we created. So the different layers in pink and yellow are different timelines. So I believe that the pink we had
inundation,
planned.
To... Inundation amounts, Alex. Yeah.
This yeah the, thank the, you.
Yeah. The yellow is a 1 foot. The blue, the light blue is a, let's see, this is just north of Raymond and South Bend. So it's like a plus 3 foot. And then there's some dark red in there, and that's their extreme flood, which is a six or 8 foot.
And Jessica, Blue Coast created the Port of Port Townsend sea level rise web map. Jessica, do you want to talk about that one at all?
Sure. This was, just for the port area. So not for, you know, like an entire county. But even in this scenario, we did a similar thing that I talked about. And we actually, you know, broke the shoreline up into characteristic reaches. And we came up with, we did wind wave calculations, but we also did the, essentially the total water levels. And one of the reasons that wind waves, I guess, are important in terms of sea level rise, you're like, well, we're talking about sea level rise. Why are we talking about wind waves? is that the wind wave effect, and even that wave run up can change with an increasing water level, because it's also dependent on the slope in which it's running up. So if that's the slope of the beach, or if that's like the slope of a structure, or if that's directly hitting a vertical wall. So all those things actually change that excursion. So it's important to understand where your kind of baseline water level is, and then how that can affect things above that particular area. So yeah, this was a set of web maps that we put together for Port of Port Townsend as part of that sea level mapping project.
It's just a really good way for the public to be able to engage with the maps with sliders and turn layers on and off and see it for themselves.
So this is where we're hoping for feedback from the Planning Commission. I'm not sure if you all have had an opportunity to review the questions. We can either walk through them each one individually, or we can just talk about what priorities the Planning Commission has for the public to provide feedback on.
Is there any preference?
Go ahead. One of the things that we've been working on with the Shoreline Master Plan and Comprehensive Plan is bulkheads.
Mm.
This becomes a significant issue when we start talking sea level rise. In particular, the county is aggressively trying to tell people to tear down their bulkheads. Mm-hmm. How, one of the things you need to do is figure out what's the impact of that to the local property owner with the seawater rise.
Right.
Are we going in the right direction on encouraging people to take down their bulkheads?
Yeah, the mapping and the inundation, and there was an acronym back there that I didn't explain, which is a DEM, which is a digital elevation model. And sometimes the bulkheads are really significant, then they are, they show up on those digital elevation models, which is basically a laser scan, so to speak, of the surface. And so sometimes those bulkheads are represented and the modeling and the waves will run up against it and then and show whether it's protected or not. We tend to remove... It would be a good idea for certain situations to not consider those permanent, either because of regulatory, but mostly because a lot of them fail and they have a lifespan, an age. So we want to see what does it look like so the homeowners can have as much time to prepare ahead of time, regardless of whether they have a bulkhead or not. And then they can look and see how this looks, whether what their risk tolerance is and what they would like to do with their property as far as repairing, replacing, building, not having a bulkhead. That's a whole, I'm sure you guys have looked into bulkheads and its impact on erosion and flooding and the backwatering of not letting water go back off of the land as well. That's another concern. So yeah, bulkheads are a whole conversation all in and of themselves.
How does that fit into your study? Will you come out with some discussion on this issue?
No, not likely, not on bulkheads. What we're going to be able to do, though, is provide information to the homeowners that so choose to engage with this information, and they can look and see with the future, with choosing their risk tolerance on which map they want to look at, whether their home's going to be at risk or not, and then they can go forth through that. So we're not advising on that or not. There's a lot of education out there. We could, if you feel it's important, I guess we could include resources of information where to go to find that information.
I think that is important.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we can include that. That's a great idea.
If you look at the temporary bulkheads that they're putting in, they're logs, right? If seawater rises, those logs are going to rise.
That's right. Yeah.
So the question is the county going down the right direction in with sea level rise, right, with what we're doing with bulkheads?
And luckily, Jessica, who's got her hand up, is one of the educators of bulkheads and shoreline armoring in Puget Sound. So go ahead, Jessica.
Yeah, I was just going to mention a couple things. One is that Christina Karecki, who is the shore-friendly lead for Kitsap County, is on the technical advisory group for this project. So she is really the one responsible for, you know, how do we then take this information and how are we communicating it back to property owners. I actually recently taught a shore-friendly workshop on alternatives to bulkheads, which I teach in many counties, including King County and Island County and a bunch of the counties. But the other thing that I'll just mention too is that one of the big statements that we make in that workshop is that bulkheads are not flood protection. And so that's something that we just have to keep in mind. You know, flood protection is like a continuous, you know, type of structure, like a levee, for example, right, where water can't get in, but then water also can't get out. So it becomes a pretty complicated issue in terms of sea level rise and bulkheads, because all water needs to make its way to Puget Sound, and it's going to find its way one way or another. So we can't really get around these issues by simply trying to put up walls on a parcel by parcel basis. Again, complicated, bigger picture, but those are the kind of conversations that we're having with property owners to help them evaluate their options. The other problem is that regardless of what Kitsap County does, our code in terms of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and some of the other regulators, they have very stringent regulations on bulkheads and armoring, and it doesn't really speak to flooding. And so that's something that's just being kind of worked on across the state. They talk about using bulkheads as erosion protection, because again, that's really what their aim, that is their purpose. They're not flood protection, but putting in some type of flood protection is very difficult and something that we, as a state, we need to work on and understand what the appropriate solutions are.
But what I'm hearing is that some conversation in this report about where to find those resources and connect that a little bit would be helpful.
At the very least, if the shoreline owner wants to know how can he protect his property? Yeah. And we're doing a sea level rise study in Kitsap County. Those shoreline owners will like to know that. I would recommend you have something on that.
Okay.
And yeah, I recommend that you put that into your survey.
Okay. We will watch for that in the survey if we want to click.
And will you include riprap construction as well?
Well, shoreline armoring, yeah. Okay. So here.
Shoreline armoring includes vertical concrete bulkheads, riprap revetments. It even includes placing what we call nature-based design or soft shore, which is sediment and wood. You still need a permit for that in order to use that as protection. So it encompasses all of those, anything you're basically placing on the shoreline to prevent erosion.
I just think that if this is a sea level rise study, it ought to be included. That's all.
Thank you. And we'll watch for it as we go through the survey questions to see. And what kind of question did you are you thinking would be helpful for the survey? Do you have something in mind?
It's your survey.
Okay, think on that. So, Alex, do you want to? Well, we're time checking. We're at 45 minutes, but I don't know. Keep going through the survey question. Okay.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Alex.
Sure. So some of the first questions are more high level, like how familiar are you with the topic of sea level rise and coastal flooding? How concerned are you? And are there specific topics or issues that you'd like to learn? Maybe that is a place we could put OPED resources. Do you want to go to the next slide?
Oh, there we go.
So we also asked what assets are important for the public. Has coastal flooding impacted a property of yours or someone you know? And we also included an interactive map for the public to document those areas where flooding has been observed. So you can move the cursor around and place it where flooding has occurred, and then a date if you are aware of what date that was.
Yeah. And one of the edits we're going to make to this based on last night's conversation is moving building and structures, including houses, up to the top of this. We could probably put maybe shoreline protection in there as well or something. Okay.
And there's also a place to add photos and if there's any additional comments. And the last portion of the survey is more demographic-based questions so that we can identify if there's any gaps in people that we're not reaching.
Yeah.
And these are more of those questions.
Which are all optional. They're not required by the survey taker to answer.
Good point.
Okay.
So this is just more of a graphic of the timeline that we gave you earlier. So the next public meeting will be on September 11th. We're hoping to have the draft maps and a preliminary report done by the end of the year. We plan on coming back to the Board of County Commissioners and the Planning Commission in April, and we will have the final report done and all of these materials by the end of June.
Yeah, now we're at the...
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we, Commissioner Beam?
This may be off topic, but we're 2 miles south of the Seattle Fault here.
Oh, the earthquake question.
And the issue comes up of tidal wave. Mm. It would be useful in this report to address something like that, to say, is Port Archer going to go up or Port Archer going to go down?
Okay, let me write that down and I have an answer. Well, pseudo answer. Earthquake.
But they've got relics of that wave at least 6 feet high in Gorse.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? So Alex and I came across a professor who was presenting down in Astoria, Oregon, on projections of earthquakes and vertical land movement, really sudden, vertical, scary vertical land movement. And it's incredibly hard to project or estimate, but we have contact with him. And so we can see what else we can dig out. This maybe if he's got anything specific for this area. I don't know if they've done anything so local. A lot of this stuff, a lot of this research, it starts really broad and really high level and then gets refined as it gets applied to different places. That's how the projections started, really broad, and they've become refined into reaches. And COSMOS, which I don't know if you've heard of COSMOS, but the USGS, that is a broad model that's becoming a little bit more refined over time. And I bet the earthquakes information, the vertical land.
If you're talking coastal flooding, that's it.
Well, that's that is.
I'm not just saying, you might want to mention some of that in your report.
Yep. I got a section down here talking about what this report can't cover, which is the what happens with a big, huge, sudden drop, like from a cascade subduction earthquake, more point to more resources around and where for homeowners about shore protection if they find that their property is at potentially a higher risk as far as like bulkheads and shore armoring, we'll call it. What this also doesn't, that the fact that it is a planning document, not site specific, it's not for engineering at that standard, and the scale, to note the scale of it. Also, the other emerging science that we don't have a solid grasp on is bluff erosion rates due to sea level rise. That's going to be a big topic for here because you guys have so many bluffs. So we have some rates. They're, again, have big confidence intervals around them. So, but we can mention what we don't know because that's, you know, I think that's important too. So.
Okay. Well, I think that's all the questions we have at this time, and appreciate your presentation.
Yeah, thank you for allowing us to come and give you a little bit of an overview about what we're hoping to do.
Okay. So
thank you for your trust.
Thank you. Our next agenda item is the 2024 Comprehensive Plan Update Briefing. Mr. Baker.
Evening, everybody. My name is Eric Baker. I'm the Deputy County Administrator for the Board of County Commissioners. One moment here. Let me get my screen up and running. I kind of want to talk about what's going to be coming your way, but also I want to talk about tree canopy requirements and a new draft that has been circulated over the last month. But let me start with...
Actually, Eric, if I could interrupt, we're at about 6:20. I'm guessing you might take longer than 10 minutes.
Yes.
Do we want to take just a quick, like, 2-minute break so I can get the recordings all squared away?
Well, let's take a 5-minute break and we'll be back here.
Not a problem.
All right.